Welcome to Fusion, a show for Relay FM members where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month I'm joined by Micah Sargent of Query and Clockwise, as well as Rosemary Orchard of Automators, to talk about what we hope and expect from Apple's fall releases. September is just around the corner. That means that Apple is probably getting ready to unveil new iPhones, of course, new iPads and Macs, probably also in the mix. Probably not the iPod Touch. Sorry, iPod Touch fans. This is like August, the end of August, and the first week or so of September is like the night before Christmas for Apple nerds. We all know something's coming, but we don't know quite what it is. But there's guesses, right? You kind of put things together. And the rumor mill this year has been, I think, pretty interesting. The last couple of years, it really feels like Apple has done a better job at keeping software a secret and less of a good job with hardware. It's pretty understandable, right? Like, hardware involves tons of partners all over the world. And like, we're seeing like YouTube videos with people like holding mock-ups of iPhones, and that's what the iPhone looks like. So some of the secrets are out, but let's get into iPhones a little bit. So rumors say that Apple may have three new phones for us this year, just like last year. The first time I wrote this sentence in our document, I was like, oh, for the first time, I was going to have three new phones. Like, wait, that's not true. This year, three new phones. So we could be seeing an updated iPhone 10, what we'll call, for sake of discussion, an iPhone 10 Plus, which would be, of course, a little bit bigger, as well as the iPhone 9. I think the iPhone 9 is perhaps the most interesting. This phone is expected to come with a notch and Face ID, but use an LCD screen to help with cost, so no OLED display like what we're used to on our iPhone 10s. And it's reported to be in between the iPhone 10 and 10 Plus in size. So my first question for y'all is this the death of small phones? I mean, the 10 could be the smallest phone in the lineup this year. Micah, do you have any thoughts around the death of the small phone?
Yeah, and see, the problem is I have monster hands. Yeah. You've pointed that
out before. They're freakishly large. I mean, if you know some people like hands. You know, when you're a kid, you know, like you put your hand out the window when you drive. If you did that, the car would swerve to the right. It's like an air brake.
Yeah, that's just true. So I have, you know, not a very good understanding of what a small phone is, because all phones are small phones in my hands. But I think that the iPhone 10, and again, approaching this with giant hands, I do think that the iPhone 10 is kind of small and easily held. And so I'm okay with that size being the smallest size, because honestly, when I first opened up the phone and got it, I was like, what is this tiny phone doing? What am I going to do with this thing? Because I was going from plus down. So I'm okay with like way small phones going away, because this sort of in-between area where we've got more screen that fits in a smaller space, I think, is the sweet spot.
I have to agree. Like, I'm a fan of larger phones. The iPhone 10, I do not have freakishly large phones. Hands, sorry, for our listeners. I can just about, if I wrap my thumb and my middle finger around, I can just touch them on the other side. So that's quite nice for grabbing and also fitting in pockets in ladies' clothing, because we don't have real pockets. But at the same time, you know, I like the big screen, because then I can fit more data on there. And quite frankly, if I'm only carrying one device around, I want to see everything at the same time. And some mobile websites still suck, so it's nice to be able to go to the desktop version and not be like, okay, now I'm going to scroll and zoom and pan for like an hour and a half to try and get to the menu on the other side of the page.
Yeah, I think, and this is kind of boring, I think I'm in alignment with y'all, where I went from the Plus to the 10, and I am pretty interested in what a plus-sized version of this phone would be like. You know, if you look at the rumors and the screen sizes, it's actually going to be a little bit smaller of a body than the Plus phone. To your point, Micah, the screen-to-body ratio is different now, and you have a lot more screen packed in a much thinner frame. I do wonder, like, out in the wider world, like, there are people still holding on to the iPhone SE. There are people, I'm married to one of them, there are people who think the iPhone 8 is still a little too big. And I do wonder kind of where where those people will be if this is true. You know, there is no iPhone SE 2 in any of these rumors. And my thought is, if we don't see one in September, it's dead. Like, I don't see them making it to the spring and then having a new SE. It feels like this is it. And I could be wrong. But, you know, I was wrong about the first SE. So if you guys remember, the iPhone SE was rumored when the 6S and the 6S Plus came out. And it didn't show up. And my wife was on an iPhone 5 that was, like, seriously falling apart. And so I bought her a 6S. And then, of course, 2 months later, the SE is out. And so I had to sell the 6S and buy her an SE because she really likes that size. And so I wonder, like, if they're leaving people behind if they go all bigger. The other thing that's interesting about that 9, it makes sense from, like, if you think about Apple from Tim Cook's perspective, like the operations guy, like, having an LCD in this phone allows you to make it cheaper. If you look at the mock-ups, it'd be a little bit thicker, perhaps, because of the way you have to have the backlight, you can't fold it over. But I wonder, like, does the 9 speak to us in any way? I, for one, am not sure that, like, as good as the iPhone LCDs are, the iPhone OLED screen is, like, really good. I don't know if I'd want to go back.
When I first got my iPhone 10, I can't remember what I was doing. I think I was in the Twitter app, and I used the Twitter app in night mode, or did at the time. And I was lying down in bed. I know I'm terrible, bad sleep hygiene, etc. But I was lying down in bed. I was looking at my phone. And so it's this very dark, dark color, right? And as the screen started to adjust its brightness down because we were in the dark, the screen started to flicker a little bit. And then I noticed this difference in shading between different areas of the screen. It almost looked like if you got water underneath the screen, and so you could sort of see splotches, areas of splotches. So I did some tests, and I put solid blocks of color on the back of the screen at like a very dark gray color, and did some tests on the brightness changing, and I was getting that same flashing thing. Anyway, I ended up having to send the phone back, and I got a new one, and the new one didn't have the flashing problem, but it still had that weird sort of awkward not discoloration, but just difference in color from the top to the bottom of the screen. And that's not something that I've ever noticed in LCDs. And so because of that, I think that I wouldn't be too bothered by having an LCD again. I do like the rich blacks, but the problem is that if you go for, I don't ever go for the full black interfaces on apps because of that. And Steven, you know the word for this, but it's where when you're like swiping or scrolling, it does like a weird ghosting type thing.
Yeah, OLEDs have like a jelly. I think they call it like the jelly effect. You saw it in the calculator app where if you move real quickly, the buttons would like deform, and Apple fixed it. It is addressable in software to a degree. But yeah, OLEDs do have like weird properties for sure.
The refreshing of the color or something from black to anything else is a little bit slower, or it ends up not looking how I would like it to. And so I wouldn't be bothered with a slightly less black display because it's not OLED, and instead it doesn't do that weird jelly stuff. Because that's something I noticed, the jelly, more than I ever noticed that black is actually just dark, dark, dark gray. But I'm probably the odd person out in that.
I don't know if you're the odd person out. I have to say, I'm one of these people. I seem to be oblivious to things like that. A lot of people have issues with looking at like the parallax effects, where your wallpaper moves when you shift your phone, or the 120 hertz refresh rate on the iPad Pro. I know that causes some people to feel motion sick, and I don't even notice.
Yep,
that
me.
So I've not had a problem with that, so I think I'd be fine going back to an LCD. You know, I probably wouldn't notice it that much. They're shinies, everybody loves shinies, but for people, especially people with poor eyesight, I think they probably wouldn't notice the difference as much, and everybody likes cheaper, so that would definitely be a significant advantage. I can't see anybody going, why can't I spend more money on my iPhone? I don't think that has ever happened in the history of iPhone, and I very much doubt it ever will.
Yeah, that's what's interesting about the 9. Thinking about my, you know, I had a lot of people in my life, just friends and acquaintances and stuff, who had like an iPhone 6 or 6S, and I pushed them all to the 8 last year. Like everyone I know socially bought an iPhone 8 this year. mostly because they asked me. And I wonder if the 9 will do to like non-enthusiasts what the 10 did to us. We're like, enthusiasts all saw the 10, like, oh, that's the one we got to get, right? But not mm-hmm. everyone felt that way, which is totally fine. That's why Apple makes multiple products. But the 9 is going to be, if this is true, the introduction of this design and Face ID like to the mainstream phone. And the iPhone 10 has sold the best out of any iPhone since it's been introduced. So like the iPhone 10 is the mainstream phone, really. It does sell more than the other phones. But you see what I'm saying? Like every phone will be like this now. The future of the iPhone that Phil Schiller promised last year is now here for everyone. And I wonder if the 9 will do better than the 8 did because of that, that maybe it will pull more people into upgrade, because for a lot of people, it'll be the first time that the iPhone they would normally buy looks new and has the stuff from the 10. So I'm very curious about this decision. You know, we can watch the average selling price, the ASP of the iPhone. It has been climbing. It climbed this year significantly because of the iPhone 10. I just wonder what'll happen. Like, will the 9, how will the 9 do compared to the 10? But then on the other end, you have the 10 Plus, which I think all three of us are interested in, and we'll go for more than the 10, because that's how Plus phones work. It will be a $1,200 iPhone. Start saving now, I guess. But yeah, I'm curious how all that will come out in the mix, because it is, even though there's going to be three phones, it's going to be different than this year. You know, this year there were two sort of regular phones and then a sort of high-end premium phone above them. And this year it sounds like you could have two high-end premium phones with one that's a little less good. And just the playbook Apple used to follow with phone releases is like thrown to the wind now. And it's hard to, I think, guess what the current, like based on current knowledge, what the future will bring. And that is exciting. In a world that we know seemingly everything there is to know about these phones, how they will perform in the market and how the market will respond to them, I think is kind of sort of still like the unfound territory in this day and age. So let's talk a little bit about iPads. I think everyone is expecting thinner bezels and Face ID. The question I have about Face ID, I think it's a question everyone has, is Apple ready for Face ID that can work in portrait or landscape? So I'm curious about y'all. Do you generally use your iPad in one or two or the orientations, or do you flip it around all the time? Like, Micah, how do you go about that?
Most of the time I do have my iPad in landscape mode, because I love the smart keyboard. I love the way that it feels. I like the clickiness of it. I think it's a fantastic keyboard. In fact, I will occasionally write articles on it. But that's most of the time my iPad is in that orientation and I'm using it in that way. I have a habit of I think it's might be because of my podcasting background and also because I'm lazy. I have a habit of sort of sending audio memo, voice memos to people when I know that I have to like say something very long to them, but we don't want to talk on the phone together. But my sort of middle ground for that is I will go from my iPhone to my iPad, and then because I've got a full keyboard, I can type out the message that I'm wanting to send. So yeah, my iPad is almost always in that landscape. And here is the interesting thing. So a lot of the stuff that goes into Face ID is machine learning tech to train the system to properly recognize the face. And so Apple spent a lot of time training the model in this portrait mode that it would work as accurately as they, you know, quoted on stage. Now that we have had, you know, that was however long ago Face ID came out. Now that we've had enough time and we're potentially looking at iPads that are going to work in landscape mode, I think that Apple's probably had the time it needs to train that model for this sort of landscape mode. And I think too that, I know rather that during WWDC, they talked about how many of the camera features for face recognition work in both portrait and landscape, and I'm pretty sure we can believe that that's like the first step to Face ID working in both modes, which I would like, because occasionally I am sort of again, as the terrible person I am, laying on my side, looking at my phone, and I'm like, oh no, I've got to sit up in order to unlock this device. So it would be nice to be able to have it in both orientations.
Yes, I have to agree. My iPad is rarely out of landscape mode. In fact, for my 12.9-inch iPad, I have the Logitech Create, which means that you practically can't use it in portrait mode unless you manage to pry it out of the case, which I'm certain I will never manage to accomplish because that thing is stuck in there. And so, you know, obviously there's a lot of people who use their iPads in all orientations, so it needs to work in portrait mode as well. But yeah, I need it to work in landscape mode, please. And I kind of don't really mind too much about whether or not it works in portrait. But if it can work in both, and if they can bring that to the iPhone as well as a bonus to iOS 12, that would be very, very nice, please. So yes, please.
It does seem like iOS 12 has made Face ID a little more forgiving. Like, I don't have to be quite squarely lined up with the phone. I don't have to. I feel like I'm not. Mm-hmm. Paying as much attention to where my eyes are than I used to. So I do think it's better. That may be completely just made up in my mind. But yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that if the iPad has Face ID, it's gotta work in landscape. I think that's the majority of people use their iPads that way. Whether or not they use a keyboard, I think if you're just holding it in your hand, the multitasking stuff is just so much better in landscape. I think that's sort of like the default. You know, we had a question on Query when it was last week about the Apple logo and the iPad being the wrong way. Like, do they turn that to be landscape? Yeah. Like, do they just embrace the iPad being a landscape device? And I think I don't know about the logo, but I think they should embrace it. I think they have embraced it, that people generally use it in landscape. I use mine in a smart keyboard, and really the only time I ever put it in portrait mode, sometimes I will do that if I am reading something long, but it's very rare, and I would be frustrated if I have to like crane my neck over to unlock Face ID.
There's going to be a lightning dongle that'll allow you to. You just plug it in, and then the dongle has just a little tiny camera on the end of it, and then you'll be able to do Face ID from any way that you're looking.
So that's going to take up, what, the only port left, maybe? I don't know. Yeah, exactly. Not sure I'm keen on that.
So let's round this out and talk a little bit about the Mac. You guys remember the Mac?
What? What's a Mac?
Mac. Yeah. Like that McDonald's burger?
Mm-hmm. Get out.
Oh,
out,
yeah.
Mega.
Get out. I know the Mac. We love the Mac. I'm talking to you
Me
from
too.
Mac.
So a Mac.
I love them. I have lots of them. I think the big story here is this story of the low-end consumer notebook. It's such a mess in that end of the line. You get a MacBook Air for $1,000, but it's really old. You get a MacBook or a two-port MacBook Pro, which probably doesn't deserve the MacBook Pro name, but they're both compromised in weird ways and have less than reliable keyboards. And I talked to Jason Snell about this a while ago in Upgrade. If you have like $1,100 to spend on a laptop and you want to buy a Mac, there's not a good answer. Like, there really isn't. There's not an obvious way forward. And remember, they start at $1,299. Like, that's with sometimes pretty limited storage or pretty limited performance. And like, there's not just a good solid consumer notebook. And Apple has always done such a good job of that. You had the iBooks, and then you had the white and black plastic MacBooks. And when I was in college, you saw those things everywhere. Like the end of the the MacBook came out in 2006. I was right. Those my second year of college, and all of a sudden MacBooks were just like everyone had a white MacBook. And if you're cool, you got the black one. And then you had the the MacBook Air, the 11 and 13 inch. You know, the second body style MacBook Air, which I still think that 13-inch MacBook Air is the best computer Apple's ever made. It's super reliable. They sold bajillions of them. Everyone had them. It defined consumer laptops and professional laptops, it turns out, because the MacBook Pro is moving its way to the MacBook Air very quickly in terms of size. Apple needs to do that again. And the one-port MacBook isn't that computer, and the two-port MacBook Pro isn't that computer. Like, so the rumors are there's going to be some sort of 13-inch machine at $1,200. I still think they need to hit $1,000, even if it's a lower SKU. it just seems like such an obvious problem, and hopefully they have an answer this fall. Do y'all have, and I know the three of us probably aren't in the market for this sort of machine, but do y'all have any wishes for a computer like this? Are there things in your mind that really jump out, like a consumer Mac notebook should have X?
Rosemary, you first.
It needs a better web camera. I'm sorry, but in this day and age, the cameras built into the MacBook Pros, they're just not that great. And when people do FaceTime with people, they want to have a nice quality camera. And on the iPad and the iPhone, if you FaceTime somebody, it's nice and you get a good image. But on the Mac, you just don't get that. And that's a real shame because people are missing out. And so, you know, you FaceTime grandma and grandma's only used computers ever. So she answers on her MacBook and all you see is this blurry image of something that you hope is grandma, but maybe it's grandma's cat and you don't know.
The one port MacBook has a 480p. Like, that's a potato. Like, come on.
And are you
the
other, kidding
it's,
me?
It's dire.
All other Macs are 720p. I've got the iMac Pro. It has a 1080 webcam for the first time.
Yeah, at the very least, that should be an error thing.
Doing?
And quite frankly, and the iMac Pro, 4K, please.
480? Are you kidding me?
It's
I didn't
real
even
bad.
Know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I have that machine at work, and at some point I was messing around, like, testing it, and I was like, oh my god, this is the worst camera quality I've seen since I had, like, a flip phone.
That's
so,
a joke! It's,
yeah, it's absolutely dire, and honestly, people want that, you know, they want it so that when they FaceTime people, they look pretty. Everybody likes to, like, feel like they look good, and potato quality cameras don't help there. I'm not sure about the touch bar for everybody. Like, my dad, I always use my dad as a litmus test. He loves it. He's got a 15-inch MacBook Pro because he likes to play around with photography stuff, and he really loves the touch bar. But my mom, nah. She does not like it at all. She's got a 12-inch MacBook, and she's fine with that because it's got a real keyboard and the function keys are there. And when she's using Citrix for work, then she has function keys, which, you know, you need from time to time. So, I would say a better web camera and hopefully a real keyboard, please, that doesn't just die because... If we're looking at the lower price end of the range, which we are, then this needs to be something that can go in a backpack and, you know, food will spill or stuff like that. And your keyboard still needs to work at the end of the day when you've got that essay to submit.
Yeah. I don't have any specific features that I would want to see in this, you know, model. I just really think that this model should exist because it is not rare for me to be asked by family members and friends who are looking for a machine that they aren't wanting to do anything else other than email and I don't know, whatever people do on their machines that aren't the things that we do on them. But all the basic tasks and like looking at YouTube and all of those kinds of things. And right now I'm like, oh, well, if you want to drop $1,600 on it, then that's great. But I think that there is room to have that, as you mentioned, that sort of $1,000 device back that would, in the event that they need to do a little bit more, would give them that opportunity. And also they can count on it being like backward compatible for a while because, or rather future proofed for a while, because right now the ones that are in those price ranges are not, not excellent. So yeah, I'm right on board with you on the webcam thing, especially if the future of Mac is also going to see things like Face ID. I mean, we've got Touch ID right now. Face ID, I think, is the logical next step. But, you know, why not be able to do Memoji on FaceTime on the Mac and different things like that? It would be nice. So, yeah, I just want that machine back that I can say, this is the one you get. You're going to be happy with it. And in the event that you decide to get an Adobe Cloud subscription, Creative Cloud subscription, and try to run Photoshop on it, like, it's not going to slow too terribly much. You'll be fine. So bring that back, please.
Yeah, not having to direct people to the refurb store would be really, really nice.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's all good stuff. The webcam is not something I thought of. I think that's really insightful. I think another thing to consider is the port situation. They talked about this on ATP. They made a pretty solid case that a machine like this should probably have one USB-A port. I think that's probably right. I don't know if Apple would do it. The other thing I think about is just durability. You know, the aluminum design.
Mm-hmm. Can we stop on that really quick? I'm so sorry. So back to USB-A. What's been fascinating to me anecdotally none. So my siblings are sort of my litmus test for what non-techie people do and how they do tech. And none of my siblings have had any issue making it's just like, oh, this is a new cord that I use that I plug into things. Like USB-C mm-hmm. for them is just like, oh, that's what mm-hmm. I have now to plug in. There's no confusion about it. There's been no grumping about it. None of that. They just get that thing and then they go to Amazon and, you know, if they're wanting to get a new, I don't know what they do. They stream video game things online so that I sound like such an old person right now. Anyway, they go and they buy the proper cord or whatever. I really feel like it's us who mm-hmm. are super steeped in tech and maybe aren't being empathetic to the greater population that have trouble getting rid of our old ports or thinking that our old ports are the ones that people want. When really, this is just anecdotally, they had no problem. It's just like, oh, I have this new machine. This is what it uses. Cool. Let's move on.
Yeah. Same with my parents. They were just like, okay, so like, what do I need? And I was like, okay, you're just going to buy these three cables that I linked you to on Amazon and then replace the cables currently plugged into the hard drive and the camera and stuff like that. And you're good. And it was like, okay. And then which way around do I plug it in? Pick
maybe
one. Doesn't matter.
Either way. Yeah, great. I'm just thinking about like college students. Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
but still, I mean, I work at a university and we prefer to recommend that people save stuff on our online storage system versus transferring things via USB. There is no printing service, full stop. That's run by an external company if you desperately need to print something, but everything's done online. There is no file transfer other than digitally. So it's...
And our on-campus stores always had like whatever was necessary for the devices that, you know, they were selling. So they mm-hmm. had all of the proper cables there for you. But I definitely think that there is an argument to be made. I just wonder how much maybe we're missing the idea that it's kind of us and not the general population that has a problem with this. So aluminum.
Yeah, so aluminum. So durability. You know, you think about these things. A low-end Mac notebook historically has had three main purchasers. You had just regular people who didn't need a MacBook Pro, didn't want to spend the money on it, and like so they just bought the cheap thing, right? Totally fair, totally reasonable use case. You have people buying notebooks for their kids, either high school or college or whatever, student use, right? So it's going to campus, it's being used in a dorm, or it's being used on the bus, it's in and out of backpacks. And then you have the sort of mass purchases through school districts. So either doing one-to-ones or having a laptop cart in a class where durability is like the number one thing they care about. Like those, like I lived in that world in my job for a long time, servicing customers in K-12. They care about durability above everything else. And as cool as like aluminum MacBooks are, and they are durable in a way that you wouldn't expect, they're not durable in ways that like plastic notebooks were. And the MacBook had like chipping top cases, whatever. Apple should have fixed that and they didn't. But notebooks not made of aluminum can get banged around and can be handled more roughly than machines made out of metal. And especially now you think about SSDs. Mm-hmm. Anything about like there's hardly any moving parts in these laptops that used to not be the case with spinning hard drives and optical drives. I don't think Apple's going to build a plastic laptop, but if they did, it would be bulletproof. Like it would be, you know, all solid state inside and like a case that could take some bumps and bruises. I don't think that's the direction they're going, but I think that durability is something to think about. Durability also includes things like keyboard failures, which, it's been a rough spot the last couple of years. It also means things like screens cracking. Like the MacBook lid is like as thin as a fine baby's hair, but like what? Yes. Like do they crack easily? I just don't know. Like that. Those are things to consider in notebooks like this. And so what I would like to see ultimately is Apple really focus on what those consumers need and build a machine that runs macOS for those types of customers and not try to build a cheaper version of what they already have, right? When the MacBook Pro came out in January 2006, it was basically like the PowerBook. The MacBook came out that spring. It was not a whittled down MacBook Pro. It was an updated iBook G4. It was still plastic. It had a different design. It shared features. It had MagSafe. It had, of course, all the Intel hardware inside. It had FireWire. It borrowed technology from the MacBook Pro, but the package they put it all in was designed for the people who Apple thought were going to buy it. And I think that's one reason that machine was so successful for so long. I think Apple, if they could get back to that, I think they could have another hit on their hands.
Yeah. Well, I'm slightly concerned that now we're going to end up from just $2,999, you can buy a deluxe carbon fiber MacBook Pro or something like that. And I can imagine Johnny Ive talking about carbon fiber. So
that was rumored for a long time. Right? I think Apple did some carbon fiber stuff. They patented some stuff. I don't think anything came of it, but that was a rumor. And as someone who loves ThinkPads, it's pretty cool.
I thought they were going to partner with Fisher-Price and bring an unapologetically plastic MacBook. It'll be called the MacBook C.
5C. C stands for C. Well, that's just it, put a USB-A port on it.
C, Rosemary, yeah. C, Micah, it still matters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they did plastic, and then they stopped doing the plastic MacBook, and then they did the 5C, and they've never done anything in plastic again. So I'm wondering if they just don't think the plastic works for them, which is a shame, because it can work really, really well.
I know that my
boyfriend's sister has got... Yeah, my boyfriend's sister, I think she's got an Acer, or is it an Asus? I always get them confused. It's one of their ultra-thin notebooks, but it's not made of metal. It's made of plastic, but it's made to look like brushed metal in some way, like some horizontal stripe line pattern thing on it. I don't really know. But it looks pretty nice, and it's durable, because she's had that machine like 5 years, and that works pretty well. So, yeah, they definitely need something there that is, consumer-friendly, and if you pour a glass of water on it, okay... If you pour a glass of water in your electronics, you get what's coming to you. But if you happen to knock it over and a speck of dust ends up in there, please don't kill the entire machine. So,
well, I think that does it. Thanks for joining me this time. If you are listening to this show and you're not a Relay FM member, that's okay. We still like you, but maybe go check out these shows. Go support them. You can learn more at relay.fm/membership. Until next time, adios.